Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. It's Friday, December 2nd. All this week, the BOF team has decamped to Soho Farmhouse in Oxfordshire for our annual gathering for big thinkers, BOF Voices 2022. Today, we'd like to bring you a special episode recorded by our editor-at-large, Tim Blanks, with Stephanie Simon and Ziad Ahmed, an old and new member of the BOF community, to reflect on some of the key insights from the first 2 days of Voices Talks. That's session 1, 2, and 3. In this conversation, you'll see that there's so much more to learn than what happens on stage at Voices. Here are Stephanie Simon and Ziad Ahmed with Tim Blanks on the BOF podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Best of Voices 2022. I'm Tim Blanks, and this is our 7th year of Voices, and we are, as usual, at Soho Farmhouse in the misty English countryside, chilly as hell as well. Voices is an annual gathering of some of the world's great thinkers and doers. I always leave fully enlightened, and I'm very excited today to be speaking to some special guests. But before then, we're going to have a look back over the past few days.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Voices 2022, the Business of Fashion's annual gathering for big thinkers, now in its 7th year.
I would say don't underestimate the incredible resilience and beauty of the human spirit under incredible hardship and adversity.
Invest the time, develop your ability to seek truth and facts rather than waiting for the next meme or profile picture to fall into your lap.
I think American luxury is freedom. I think it's having the freedom to wear what you want when you want to wear it, and having the freedom to put on something that frees you up mentally and spiritually so that you could be the best version of yourself.
And that maybe we can reimagine a world, a system, a fashion that looks and feels differently and that serves more of us.
And every single year they read the latest IPCC report coming out of the UN or other scientist bodies saying we're pretty much getting nothing done. They rationally conclude that this is kind of a heist.
But, you know, it's not borrowing, it's stealing from the future to me. And I think we've got everything sort of upside down.
One of the most worrying aspects of our modern digital world, the digital divide.
Take a deep, focus breath with me. We're going to close our eyes, breathe in for 4, hold for 4, and breathe out for 4. Let's go.
Now, you saw one of my guests tonight in that clip there. Ziad Ahmed is the chief executive of Juve Consulting. He spoke to us yesterday about why Gen Z is so angry, but he has a huge big smile right now. So I'm waiting to see what he has to say tonight. Our other guest is Stephanie Simon, who is the former head of community at Clubhouse. Now, Stephanie, you've been here before. You're a Voices veteran. What do you expect every year when you come?
This is my 6th year, which is kind of nuts. I always expect, and this is actually what I love about it, there's such diversity of voices, and that's why it's called Voices. And I think not just the perspectives. Imran said the first day, this isn't meant to be fashion, talking about fashion with people in fashion. And I think that everyone walks away with this weekend, both with enlightenment, as you said, but really deep relationships that I think bring unexpected collaborations following this. That's certainly happened in my life, and I think it's happened in many people's lives after Voices.
You made a very good point there that I should have made at the beginning, that we are the business of fashion, but this event itself, fashion is often quite marginal. Mm. I mean, it's in our minds, but what we're talking about are the world's big, definitive issues. Ziad, this is your first time.
Yeah, it is.
So bearing in mind that you're coming to an event hosted by the Business of Fashion, have you been surprised? Have you been enchanted? What has happened to you over the past few days?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my biggest expectation walking in is that I would, like, be horribly underdressed, like, underqualified in my attire to even be here. And so I think that was my biggest anxiety, walking into such an esteemed site and source of fashion. I have been surprised, I think, at how much fashion has been at the margin of a lot of the conversations. And obviously, fashion is an integral part of our everyday, right? It's what we're wearing. It's everywhere. And so I think it's been really beautifully weaved into a lot of the stories that we're telling and a lot of the discourses that we're convening around. But I've been really moved at how expansive this conversation has been and has become. And I sort of expected maybe, I don't know, a very like New York Fashion Week vibe, if that makes sense. And that has not at all been my experience. I think my experience has been that this is less a networking conference and less a runway and more a real convening of deep, intellectual, meaningful conversations. And it's not about how many people you meet, but about the few deeper, meaningful relationships that you walk away with. And I think there's something so beautiful and profound about the space that you guys have really wonderfully curated and convened. And I feel really lucky to be here.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that, because you're not unique in feeling that you know, thinking about what you're going to wear to this thing. But
and look at you in your patchwork jacket. You look great. Yeah.
And you had your
You guys, I'm trying to just hold my own.
No, you had your message jacket on yesterday.
Yes, yeah, so. I had to be on brand. I had to be on brand.
On brand.
Yeah, on brand.
Now, your talk yesterday was about why Gen Z is so angry. And we began the day with some very esteemed news journalists talking to us about the state of the world right now. And it became very clear, I think, to everybody why young people are frustrated and furious about the world that is being bequeathed to them by their elders, who in many cases have completely lost the plot.
Yes.
After that brush with cold, hard reality, we fight our way back to a position of, well, hope, perhaps, or at least seeing what idealistic people, passionate people are doing to address these issues in the world. I was very impressed by Mo Goddard, who spoke to us about AI. Let's just have a look at him, and then we'll talk about what he had to say afterwards.
When they will not only have emotions, they will have more emotions than we do. Please understand that. Just like as we have more emotions than a jellyfish, because we can contemplate concepts like the future, and so we can have hope and optimism and so on, they will have more emotions than us because they have more cognitive bandwidth. And humanity has only agreed three things. Wherever we are from all of the speeches that we've heard today, we've agreed, all agreed that we want to be happy. We want to have the conditions to find our happiness. We will have compassion in us to make those we care about happy. By the way, if you're a drug dealer and you only care about your daughter, you still have the compassion to want to make her happy, right? And we all want to love and be loved.
AI. This was Mo's vision of AI. Stephanie, how did that sit with you?
I actually think it tied really closely with the last speaker today as well. Imran, who's the founder of Humane. I think that this idea, I loved also the point that we didn't show, but that he made about us being the mommies and daddies of AI. And that if we don't illustrate what behaviors we want sort of AI to, and the kindness and the love that we want to emit out into the world, then AI won't either. And I think that it becomes a really interesting reckoning and lesson for us as humans as we sort of go throughout our day and how we can be instructed to the AI. And I think that, again, that's what Imran was sort of driving at, which is we ultimately want to be instructive to AI. We don't want to be led by tech. We want it to be invisible and at service to us. And it can be overwhelming to think about the capacity and the fact that it's going to be much more intelligent than we could ever imagine and a billion times more intelligent than
times.
A billion times. What was the analogy he made?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what was the analogy? Do you remember
The whole notion of that we've been educated in, you know, by Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, that the future sends back a Terminator to save us from AI, the AI that we've created that has destroyed humanity. Mm. And he said, AI won't care about humanity. Human beings will be less than a fly to AI. Yes. AI will be so advanced. And then he presented this other notion that we teach AI by example. Mm. And by being ethical, kind human beings, AI learns to be ethical and kind. Mm. Now, what do you think about that, Ziad? Because if I was 23 years old, I would look at that scenario that Mo was painting for us and think, ooh.
What?
The world.
Not
the
possible world, world, like, or not? Or
relying on human beings to teach by example.
Yeah.
But teach by an example of kindness and ethical way of living.
Yeah.
I don't know, when I look around me right now, I don't see so much leadership based on ethics and kindness.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've certainly been moved by, I think, the number of leaders here who at least are positing, leading by, you know, ethics and compassion. And perhaps there are more than I maybe previously thought, or maybe I often, you know, have a preconceived notion about. But I think often in my work and in my role talking about Gen Z, there's often an assumption that Gen Z is like leading the charge towards this innovation. Mm-hmm. And like Gen Z is the first adopters and the most bullish on Web3 and where the internet is headed and AI and all of these things. And I think broadly speaking, that's not really the case. Mm-hmm. But I think broadly speaking, a lot of young people, to your point, are really skeptical and critical about our own relationships to technology, about the technology companies that currently dominate the market, and about, to your point, leadership broadly and who's in charge. And I think that there's oftentimes this conflation of innovation and progress. This idea that business, right, that leadership, that industry tells us this is new, so it is better. And I think that it was rightfully sobering to hear folks walk through the ways in which a lot of these new technologies perhaps have the promise to make us better, but at present are not. And really are, I think, eloquently displaying and articulating that tension point that if the right people were creating, if the right people were leading, then perhaps these technologies could serve us, could serve the many. I am deeply skeptical that that is the case. You know, in my experience, I am still most often the only young person in the room. And most of the rooms that I operate look nothing like me or the communities that I care about or love or come from or that my friends come from. And I think that what is dangerous is that it's not only to me about are the people leading it demonstrating ethical behavior, because people have different codes of ethics. Mm. It's about, do the people creating represent the ethical codes of the most marginalized among us? And I think most often the answer to that question is no, especially in technology conversations. And so, inshallah, God willing, the right people are given the reins to create a technology that works for us. But you are right to believe that I am deeply skeptical of that future. And
well,
promise.
Let's look at one of the speakers from today, definitely not Gen Z, but she had a message that was, I thought, quite clear-eyed. She's very pragmatic.
Yeah.
She talks about a theme that came up a few times, the notion that this sort of ethical approach has to be mandated. Mm. It can't be voluntary. Mm-hmm. It has to be legislated. Companies have to be held to account. Obviously, I'm talking about Baroness Lola Young.
You can reel off all of these things, and what's the average citizen to know? What do even I know when I see all these figures? And that's why I think regulation has to step in for all the reasons that we said about needing to be systemic change. But that systemic change also has to happen within governments, because they're in thrall to certain kinds of businesses in whose interest it is to keep mining fossil fuels and all the rest of it, exploiting labour, as actually has been done for hundreds of years. So it's really that we've managed to refine this system to work to the benefit of a relatively small number of people who are aging, like myself, as we're all aging. But, you know, it's not borrowing, it's stealing from the future to me. And I think we've got everything sort of upside down.
Stephanie, how did you find the Baroness's speech?
Sobering, but honest. I think that what was interesting, not just that someone from the public sector is sort of saying this, but from the public sector, from a private sort of company, from a public company, and from the financial sector. All four of these people were sort of in agreement
on
about
on
this
panel.
Yeah, about this need for regulation. And I think that it's really difficult to probably mandate a code of ethics into who's going to develop sort of technology, but it seems much more straightforward to mandate the targets that we're going to need in order to ensure progress from a climate change perspective. And to me, I'm an American, but big fan of big government.
As am I.
Yeah, and I think that is sort of the answer. And I think that she's spot on. And I think this idea of stealing from the future, I think technically we're in the same. We're close to being in the generation. You're Gen Z. I'm barely millennial. But I think this same attitude of just...
I'm hopelessly boomer.
No, you're thrivingly...
You're fantastically boomer.
Yeah, you're like thrivingly boomer.
Yeah, but I think that what she's saying is honest but true. And I think that the fact that we had a broad range of backgrounds in an agreement on this is indicative, hopefully, of where we're going. But the question is, how quickly can we get there?
Okay, what do you, watching her, and Stephanie's right, that panel was people from a range of different areas, private, public. When you see people like her, and you can feel how fierce she is.
Yeah.
You can feel how fierce she would be. How do you feel? Mo leaves you with deep skepticism. Then you see somebody, obviously legislating AI. It just feels like trying to put bees in a box. But what do you think?
My biggest takeaway, from being here and from hearing these conversations is I think the leaders and the solutions to the problems that we are facing exist. It's a question is, are the people who currently have the reins willing to give them up? And are the people who have the fuel to power the engines that we know can run willing to provide that fuel? And I am so convinced that we can, if the political will, if the financial will, if the social will exists, can tackle these massive problems that we are facing. And I especially believe that to be true because of the tremendous young activists and organizers from diverse communities who inspire me and teach me and call me in every single day, who are following in the footsteps of incredible leaders who've spoken truth to power against incredible odds, who've surmounted barrier after barrier after barrier in the hopes that maybe we can shift the needle a little bit. But I think what I've also heard reiterated throughout this time is like, the time is now.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have much time to keep shifting the needle a little bit. We got to swing that shit, like, really urgently and dramatically. And so my only hope is that, coming away to your point about unexpected collaborations, like, make her prime minister. like, what are we waiting for? Like, if we know that the leaders exist, let's do everything that we can to get them the reins.
I mean, one of the issues that has come up, watching people talk about creating housing, watching people talk about creating economic opportunities for the excluded in the world. Their passion, the commitment to their projects is really inspiring. But over everything, there's this umbrella of the climate crisis, which these people are talking about. And it, like you said, action now, because it actually is kind of already too late.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic Sky Panorama glass roof. Ugh, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey.
You talked yesterday, actually, about this idea of the tension, sort of holding both seemingly opposing ideas. And I think that you just touched on this, like, this desire for human self-actualization and for this desire for us to reach our potential, whether it's because you've been impoverished or whatever, versus the larger narrative of like, yeah, we want everyone to feel self-actualized, except for everything's burning. The world is burning. And I think that these ability to hold both of these ideas is challenging, but I think it's actually quite related, even what we were talking about the ethics, which is the great leaders who will lead and will help sort of mommy and daddy, the AI, they need to be self-actualized. They must be. And so in order for more of us to sort of educate and be mummies and daddies to the AI, we all need to be as self-actualized as possible, which means we leverage all of these technologies, et cetera. But I do think that there's these sort of contradicting ideas, which is like the world is burning, but me, I need to get it self-actualized. Yeah. It's really fascinating, I think.
And even here, the opposing voices, they're not in opposition, but they are saying very different things. I mean, I really love watching Tariq Fancy as well, because something else that comes through in the last few days and always at Voices is people who've jumped the fence, people who've been working for big business or in high finance or something, who have a 180-degree change in their lives and start working for change. And Tariq is one of those people. Mm. So let's have a clip of him.
We're going to need more clean players, right? This sport needs more clean players. So there's a lot of people in this room who are leaders. It is more expensive. It is harder. It's going to be difficult going into a tough economic period. But we're going to need to provide some examples of how play can be clean. And in part, that's for the second reason. So we can go to governments and tell them that, listen, we need regulation. Because number one, individual action is not going to aggregate enough, right? Nice people using paper straws is not going to do it, right? We need it to be systemic. It has to be everyone. Number two, it can't be voluntary. It has to be mandatory. And I think if we couch that, trying to play clean and leading the way with a very honest message that it's pretty much time to call on the refs, because otherwise we're not going to be able to create the kind of systemic change required, then I think we actually have a chance of turning the tide this decade.
So that is the theme, legislated change. I mean, it has to be. He spoke about a lot of other things in his talk. I mean, I find people when they've, as I said, jumped the fence, I find
them
really
interesting. We call it the zeal of the converted. There's no zeal like that of the converted.
But they also know the enemy.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. So what do you make of somebody like him when he actually does have ideas that workable, as he points out, expensive? And you're hitting shareholders where it hurts. So, you know, this is a huge challenge.
I mean, I think he's absolutely right. That I think a lot of these things, to me, come back to this idea that we need system-level change. Right? And system-level change is really hard to accomplish for a plethora of reasons. One, I think that when we often talk about things in system-level change, then a lot of people divorce themselves from culpability, which is why, like, in my talk, I reference this idea that, like, we have to hold ourselves to account. Because in many ways, like, we are the system, especially when we are convening, to your point, the thinkers and doers of our time. To what extent are we a reflection of the system, and are we accountable to have to change such that it lays the groundwork that we can make those pivots, right? That we can make that fence not just jumped, but completely toppled over, right? And I think for me, yes, like I am a big advocate of political and legislative change, but it's really hard, especially when systems were actively constructed to marginalize and silence the voices of many. And there's a lot of democratic institutions and reforms that are necessary to be completely, completely recalibrated if we are meaningfully to think about these problems. Because the problem is the people who have power right now are incentivized to not do these things, have every incentive in the world to keep getting their dividend at the end of the year, to keep running on these two-year terms and campaigning constantly and not doing the system-level change, but instead doing the bright, shiny thing that gets them reelected 2 years later and doing the incendiary thing to get them elected the next 2 years later. And so for me, like what we need to see, I think, is us holding ourselves to account. And also, I think sometimes what we do a poor job at, or even I do a poor job at, is prioritizing. Like, we talk a lot about maybe the superficial or the top of the problem instead of the root. And I think what a lot of these questions and conversations come to is, like, we have to tackle the root, which is, like, how are people voting? Whose voices are at the table? What is the system? And how can we pick away at it, fundamentally change it? Because for me, only then will we have the space to even make some of this change happen.
What do you think about the sentiment that was expressed by, I think maybe it was even Tariq, actually, talking to younger people who said, we don't want to change the system. We want to jettison the system.
Yeah.
It's so broken.
Yeah, it's not broken. What? It's working exactly as designed.
Yeah. Well, but that, I actually think that was a bit of the elephant in the room, that he didn't talk at all about what if we just shift the targets away from a growth economy all the time? And then if we didn't always have to hit the profits that the shareholders are demanding, maybe things could actually change.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here. I'm not totally Gen Z and I'm not a socialist, but I do think that that's an important point. The elephant in the room is also, in addition to there needing to be rules that are changed, because I think that's what he was essentially doing. He used a lot of sports analogies, which I love as a former basketball player. But I think that the other rules that need to be changed are the ones that are requiring the CEOs and the executives of all these companies that have to hit targets for their shareholders.
Yeah.
They're making bad decisions. They're the ones that are saying 80% of their decisions are greenwashing because they have to hit targets.
That was pretty amazing.
No one touched on that. And as a former finance person myself, I was like, this is the thing nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah. CEOs who admit that the sustainability practices
are greenwashing. It was 70% in America. Yeah. It was 70% in America.
It's mind-boggling. But I think to that point, I think a lot of young people are righteously right, looking at the world and saying, this can't be the best that we can do. Mm. And these systems are not broken. They're working exactly as they were designed, right, to privilege the few and not the many. Like, that's why they were constructed, and that's how they were constructed. And so it comes back to Audre Lorde's quote that gets quoted in activist and organizing circles all the time. Like, you cannot tear down the master's house with the master's tools. Like, we are trying in many ways, in many cases, to use the tools that were made to subjugate folks, try to tear down the system that was created to subjugate folks. And so I think it's hard to imagine what would a system look like that's oriented on a different axis and maybe impossible in some cases to even conceive of. But I think we have to, unless we have the political imagination, unless we have the gall to at least orient ourselves of what it could look like. I don't think we're going to move the needle far enough, because whatever is the utopia that we're imagining, it should be a damn good one, because I'm a big believer in, like, we shoot for the moon and we land amongst the stars.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the speakers today was a woman called Dame Stephanie Shirley, and she's 90.
Yeah.
And she has made successful businesses by basically ignoring the system, creating her own, as a woman working in tech, at the very beginning of tech almost, before Facebook.
Crazy.
I mean, incredible. And being very, very successful with it. Completely inspirational. She got the big standing O of the day.
She deserves
Let's have a look at her.
But the more worrying divide today is between the corporate and institutional haves who dictate the terms of the online world with their extraordinary power and influence, and the have-nots, the vast majority of common internet users trying to navigate an environment in which it can be hard to know what and who is the truth.
Okay, end of the day. As Imran was doing it with the audience earlier, what was your takeaway from the last 2 days?
I actually think the clip that you just showed was something that really resonated deeply with me as with a woman that works in technology and is sort of building another company within technology. It's really, really important that the people who are shaping this next world, whether we call it a metaverse or just like the internet generally as our next world, that the people building it are reflective and sort of different from potentially the patriarchy, yeah. White people that built our real world and conquered other nations and sort of didn't have a collaborative nature. I think that it's really, really important that we have women and underrepresented people helping build that next world. And I think she's kind of touching on that, but that was one of my biggest takeaways because it's something I think about a lot. And I think it's radically important in ways that maybe we don't fully comprehend that this world on the internet and digitally is very, very similar to just back in the days when humans settled and became civilized on this planet. And I think that in order to avoid the same problems, we have to have a different set of people building it.
Ziad, your reaction?
Connecting back to your point about this idea of people disagreeing about how we ought to make change, I think one of my biggest takeaways is that I think it will take a lot of us with a lot of different viewpoints come from a lot of different backgrounds to make the change that we want to see in the world. And what I mean by that is like what I am moved by in being here is look at the gains that science has made and look at the gains that fashion has made and look at the gains that politics and regulation has made and look at the gains that different folks have made in different circles. And I don't think there's any one way of making change that will save us. And look, I am hopeful, but maybe skeptical if we can save us, but I am hopeful. But my hope stems from this belief that if we more equally distribute opportunities such that more people can become those scientists and more people can become those politicians and more people can be those leaders from those represented communities and come together and not say, oh, you're solving the problem wrong. My way is the right way. Instead saying, how can we work together to tackle the root from our various different disciplines? Then perhaps we can unleash the power of our collective voices to achieve better.
Okay, so we have a plan of action from days one and two.
I don't know about all that. Maybe.
I think he has a plan for all the things. So I'm really into that.
We can say that that's a positive note.
Yeah.
From days one and two. Thank you very much, you two.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for
goodbye from Voices 2022.
The BOF podcast is edited and produced by Emma Clark, Kate Vartan, and Eric Bria in the BOF studio team.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit.
From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.